Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Dr. John Endres. Today we're going to be talking about shocking news regarding the South African ambassador to France, Natiem Tetwa, who has passed away at an untimely age. We have also we're also going to be talking about the internal politics of Johannesburg, and we're going to be talking a little bit about Eskom. So let's start off with our first story. News breaking just, I think, an hour or two before we actually recorded this. South Africa's ambassador to France, Natiem Tetwa, who was formerly Minister of Arts and Culture and before that Minister of Police, has died in Paris. The French authorities received a concerned call from his wife, who's in South Africa, saying that he had sent her a very worrying message, which is implied to be sort of suicidal. Police found his body on Tuesday and is believed that he had jumped from the 22nd floor of a 4-star hotel in the city. The police in France are looking into this. Tetwa was recently implicated at the ongoing testimony at the Matlanga Commission for allegedly interfering in the operation of the police and political killings task teams and those operations in KZN. And so there is, of course, speculation, I think, already running a bit wild. So we don't really know that many facts yet, only that he's dead. John, you know, the Matlanga Commission is already revealing sort of all of these networks and links and accusations of criminality. I can't see this as doing anything but only worsening the sort of rampant speculation around this. I mean, you know, did he commit suicide because he thought that because he was implicated? Was this actually a murder covered up as suicide? That's, of course, I'm sure what people have already started speculating about on social media. What's your takeaway from all of this?
Yeah, I think it brings to mind something that we had in a staff discussion earlier this morning, which is how important it is to have the facts to hand before judging certain situations or drawing conclusions about certain situations. And this is one of those cases where, you know, the facts are still very scarce, and therefore it's hard to draw conclusions. But I think it is inevitable, given the context, the political context in South Africa, that this kind of speculation now takes place. And as you say, one area of speculation goes in the direction of it having been a hit or a murder, because of, you know, people being nervous about certain revelations being made by the former police minister against them, maybe. So was this a move to shut him up?
And of course, political killings is at the heart of what the Matlanga Commission is essentially talking about, right? You know, Murdering of politicians is exactly the issue here.
Exactly. And then another explanation could be that it is related to, that it would have been suicide related to this Matlanga Commission, or suicide unrelated to the Matlanga Commission. So those are all various options that are possible. But what I also take away from this is just the further notion that the Matlanga Commission is not just about crime and criminality and the nexus between the police and the politicians, but also the broader implications that the commission, I think, will have for our politics, in the sense that many ANC politicians, I think, do have dirt on each other, so to speak. And I think many of them are going to be nervous about some of that dirt getting dished out in the Matlanga Commission. And so it is liable to raise tensions, to cause maybe divisions, and all of this in a pre-election year is going to be quite tense. And I think that's the key takeaway at this point. We don't know if there's a link or not, but certainly the Matlanga Commission, I think, is going to have an impact far beyond the mere investigation of the facts of the matter.
Indeed. And part of that impact will just be the fact that regardless of what the evidence ends up saying, you know, whether there was some sort of link, whether there was anything like that, the fear and the paranoia and the suspicion that's going to come from this by many people who already do not trust police and much of our political class is going to be intense. So I think that's something to keep an eye on. All right, let's move on to Our next story, Johannesburg city politics. We did an episode a few days ago where the PA, the Patriotic Alliance, had announced that it was leaving the Johannesburg coalition because it had not been given the seat of Kenny Kunene back as MMC for transport in the city of Johannesburg. They also said they were going to leave the Government of National Unity as a whole because they had not been given this position back. Now, I speculated that they were serious about this leaving because I thought that this would be strategically a really good idea, that the PA could leave all of the coalitions it's in just before the about a year out from the local government elections, campaign as an opposition party, and then, you know, maybe go back into government after the elections. How naive and foolish was I? Because apparently there has been meetings and agreements between the ANC and the Patriotic Alliance behind the scenes. Fikile Mbalula and David Makura have apparently pushed the ANC in the city to agree to the PA's terms. And according to reporting from the Daily Maverick, Kenny Kunene is going to be reinstated as the Joburg MMC for transport. The ANC, this is quite a climb down for them. They their spokesperson at Karting was saying, "We don't work with ultimatums. It was never our problem. It was them who removed Kenny. It is them who is bringing Kenny back. How did you give us this ultimatum? It's illogical, to say the least. However, our attitude is subject to the arrangement that is there with the coalition government itself. We really do not have an issue. Our problem is them throwing tantrums like they are young kids." That was Mzi Kumalo from the ANC in Gauteng. John, at the same time, there's been a bit of a shakeup in Action SA with a bunch of councillors being fired. And, you know, we're getting parties already sort of announcing potential mayoral candidates way ahead of the election. Of course, the one who's made the most of a splash is DA candidate Helen Ziller. But then we've also got the Kenny Kunene from the Patriotic Alliance, and the ANC seems to be deliberating who they're going to put up, and that's being determined partly, it seems, by internal faction fighting. And then we've also got talk from Action SA that they might maybe run Herman Mashaba as Joburg mayor, although I've also seen them say that they're not going to do that. Where do you think Joburg stands now, and what do you think of the PA's decision to remain in the coalition in Joburg?
So I think one of the things that illustrates for me is the, you use the word climb down. And I think that's a really important word in this context, because the PA has sort of applied massive pressure on the ANC and ended up getting what it wanted. And every time this happens, it makes the ANC look a bit weaker. And I think this is part of the process by which the authority and credibility of the ANC is undermined and the party as a whole gets weakened. What I'm curious to see is if we're going to see a reversal of the polarity of the ANC. So up to now, because the ANC has been so dominant in our politics, it has had an attractive polarity. So parties want to join with it, to be close to power, to be in government, to get positions. But I half suspect that we might get to the point where that polarity reverses, and parties will start distancing themselves from the ANC because they consider it to be a losing proposition. You know, we saw, I think it was a sort of completely unsubstantiated number floated by secondhand reporting out of the ANC, saying that the ANC might be polling as low as 12% in Johannesburg. And, you know, if something like that turns out to be true, then many of these small parties might say, well, this is not somebody good to be associated with. They're falling so fast, we'd better distance ourselves from them. And so over time, we might actually see an outcome where parties, instead of competing to be close to the ANC, start competing to be as far away as possible from the ANC. And that is something that I think the ANC is going to be watching with a fair bit of worry if it starts happening, because, of course, then your authority drains away even more quickly if you get to that point. The other conclusion from the story and related stories that you mentioned is how far in advance of the elections the jostling and campaigning is starting. And I think that is reflecting the fact that the political parties are recognizing both the importance of Johannesburg and Gauteng for the national political battle. but also how contested these cities are. You know, so some other cities you might be able to make a call on who's likely to win, you know, who you might be looking to work with. In Johannesburg, that's quite tough. And so the jostling starts early. The investment of resources starts early. And I suspect that the rearrangement of the Action SA Johannesburg caucus is also reflective of that. This is preparation for the elections, you know, making sure that the caucus is well aligned with whatever objectives Action SA is pursuing. Nick?
Indeed. It's, I think, you know, you see, when you see changes in the campaigning, that's actually a sign of kind of the politics sort of maturing and becoming more competitive. You know, you're seeing parties having to put forward people. I mean, we don't actually elect mayors directly in South Africa, but the fact that parties feel like they need to put someone forward and out there in the public space, someone who has credibility and is famous, it suggests to me that everyone is kind of beginning to engage in this much more competitive space, and that is good for our politics. This kind of innovation is good, and it also means that voters can get a better look at who is likely to be their mayor. It's not entirely decided by party politics. The parties are going to put up someone and say, is this person credible to you? And that will, I think, shift the opinions of some voters. Okay, let's move on to our next story. And following on the theme of me being wrong about things, I was extremely pessimistic during the height of the power crisis from Eskom, I think in 2022, was it now, that Eskom's turnaround could be quick, or indeed that it would happen. I thought that the forces of inertia in the government were too strong. Now, Eskom has just announced that it has, for the first time since 2017, actually turned a pre-tax profit of about 24 billion rand. This profit has a little bit artificially boosted, and by a little bit, I mean quite a lot, by they were allowed a once-off exemption gain from SARS of a fuel levy rebate. But even not including that, Eskom still made a pre-tax profit of about 12 billion rand. So, John, you know, what do we owe the sort of turnaround in Eskom? I think part of what's happened is that private individuals, where they could, took, you know, it into their hands to reduce their dependence on the Eskom grid, and that gave Eskom a little bit more breathing room. You know, there was the allowing government freeing up space for big producers to produce some of their own electricity. You had lots of wide-scale adoption of solar panels and such. But it does seem like Eskom itself is performing a little bit better. What do you make of all this?
Well, it's also allowed to charge higher prices. Right, so it can...
It always helps.
Sorry about that. Yes. So it's able to, you know, if it's selling the same volume of electricity, it'll earn more money because it's charging more for it. So that would have helped a bit. But I think overall, all South Africans are very relieved not to have had load shedding pretty much since March last year, with a few spots of load shedding here and there, but not enough to phase us. That is a very big relief. And it's, of course, also economically a very important factor, because with electricity, the economy can't grow. So now we've got electricity. We've got at least one of the boxes ticked for economic growth, and that's good. Long may it last. I think one point that's also worth mentioning here is the municipal debt to Eskom. So that's maybe all the more remarkable that the utility was able to post a profit, given that the municipalities owed, I think, over 100 billion rand in outstanding money so far. So that's where Eskom has sold electricity and delivered electricity to towns, which then sell the electricity on to residents, receive the payment in turn, and then keep it for themselves. They don't send the payment on to Eskom. And that number keeps growing quite fast. And that's a bit of a problem as well. Imagine what Eskom could do if it had 100 billion rand extra in revenue. Its financials would look far better. Its balance sheet would start looking better. And it would look like a much more sustainable operation overall.
Now, it wouldn't have to go to NERSA to get such massive increases to the tariffs. But it's not just price increases. Eskom has been having many fewer breakdowns with its coal power plants, it seems. We've actually seen the energy availability factor climb recently. I mean, what do you think has been driving that positive development?
I think it's sort of the culmination of multi-year processes of bringing capacity back online that had dropped off. So we know that there was the Kubach nuclear power station where the units had to be refurbished. Those, I think, have come back on stream now. Then we had Medupi and Kostile, which were those enormous power plants that were years behind schedule and billions of rands over cost. Finally, I think, coming on stream. And so you pick up 800 megawatts here and another 1,000 there, and soon you're talking real electricity. Now each 1,000 megawatts is one stage of load shedding saved. And I think we've probably added 5,000 megawatts back that we're missing. Plus you've got about 6,000 megawatts, I think, of renewables, new capacity that came on grid. That is unreliable capacity, but it is there. So when the sun is shining, then it will generate that electricity. Plus demand also came down. So overall, the picture is looking quite favorable. And again, long may it last. That's what our economy needs. It's what the country needs as well.
Indeed. So it's interesting that it's, you know, this is a great example of why we shouldn't become obsessed with one reason. This does seem to be a very multi-reasoned, multi-factor thing. Different angles pushing all together in the right direction helped to turn the situation around pretty quickly. But as you say, you know, Eskom has, even I think this year, every now and again announced sort of jitters that that they were things that threatened them. The other reason, of course, they're making money is they're not, because of that extra capacity, they're not having to run the open cycle gas turbine as much to prevent load shedding, which were extremely expensive. Okay, well, that is all the time we have for today. Big things are afoot in the country, and we shall keep a close eye on them. We hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.